Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, we are your home of Sports Blue Balls here on 93.7 WEEI. It is Rich Certainly, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and we are broadcasting live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water. Happy 617 day, gentlemen. How do you celebrate?
I didn't even know. Tenants? We got tenants?
I come to Fenway Park and do a sports talk radio show.
How do we celebrate? We pay too much on our property taxes and pretend we like the Boondog Saints.
Right.
Nobody liked the Boondog Saints. You just say you did.
Well, we've sold the city to Scotland, so we have to do something Scottish, don't we? I mean,
Yeah, I know. And it's wild, too, because Ken was... We were off the air. We were talking about how now Norway is showing up.
Oh yeah,
and Norway's everywhere. But Ken, you made a pretty funny point.
Well, it's just that they do the rowing thing, which is cool. But what's their second act? They have no second. You know,
they're the Baja Men of World Cup fans. They're one hit wonder. They do row, row.
I mean, we're spoiled because Scotland is just so constant. They never shut off.
They don't. It's full bore. You know, balls to the wall. It's impressive. But I mean, dude, it's kind of cool though that the kind of comparisons between the two countries as far as soccer is the biggest sport in both of those countries, yet they haven't had success in the World Cup until this year.
Yep.
I mean, this is the first time Norway's been in it. I realized this since 1998.
Jeez.
You know, the first game that the Scots have won in 36 years. So for Norway and for Scotland to be here, like the passion is, I mean, would they be this passionate if they were in it all the time? I don't know, but these countries have not had a team in the World Cup do as well as their teams are this year. And I think that's what brings all the passion and pageantry with it.
It's wild, too, because, you know, we've been talking the last couple of days, you know, is this teaching American sports fans a little something about, like, how to be a true, like, diehard sports fan? Are they showing us up a little bit? And I thought about it a little bit, and I thought, okay, pregame-wise, absolutely. Like, what they're doing and the way that they're just absolutely wrecking Faneuil Hall right now, and they're over running out of beer at Hennessy's, and even the Samuel Adams tap room, I guess, ran out of Sam Adams, which is utterly insane.
Yeah, crazy.
But then I thought about, like, the games themselves, the matches, rather, and all the singing and the dancing, and how we're not like that here, and I figured out why. It's because when they're watching the actual game of soccer, they have to do something to keep themselves entertained.
Yeah. Unless it's Messi or Mbappe or sure. You know, Holland, that's it. You know.
Because, as I said, I've had World Cup fever. I'm truly into it. It's the one time where I'm really into the game of soccer. But I'm not going to lie. Almost every match I've watched, I've been like, okay.
Yeah. It's like a Red Sox game.
Right. It's like, when are we scoring?
This is interesting. Maybe this is coming from a defensive guy. So, you know, you guys, you're going to maybe – call me out on that. But, you know, you look at, remember the Super Bowl in 2018. It was a low-scoring Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
The Patriots and the Rams. People didn't like it. You know, it wasn't that visually that much fun. I loved it because it was still a compelling game because one mistake, one slip, and one, touchdown that team was going to win the game.
Yeah.
It's in soccer. So if it's nil-nil, you know, and it go, okay, they're not scoring a lot, but the person that scores is going to win the game. So you're kind of on edge because it's still a tight game, even though there's not a lot of scoring. I still find that compelling, exciting, and interesting. But I can understand why people don't like it because there's not enough scoring. But
sure.
I just think if the score's close.
We know it's so intimate. We know McVay. We know Gronk. Like, he made the big catch in the game. I just don't know these players. That's all it is.
Right? Sure.
Like,
that's a big part of it.
And to your point, I mean, there was a guy who called in that made me laugh when he first was talking about the game, but he was from Cape Verde, and he was just like, hey, you guys got to talk about Cape Verde. I mean, this was like an all-time epic game, and I Googled real quick the score. It was nil-nil, a 0-0 game. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I guess it was epic because Spain was favored by a ton to win that game, and I guess the goalie of Cape Verde was like Tim Thomas in the Stanley Cup final. Yeah. Bulletproof. I mean, nothing could get past the guy.
You got to compare, like, Spain has 100 million people where, you know, Cape Verde has 500,000.
right.
So it's David and Goliath. And to come to a draw is like winning 10-0 to them.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
It is nice. And I like the fact that, you know, I can get into soccer for, you know, once every several years and then just kind of forget about it. And then it comes back and I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, everywhere around you. It's like, I, you know, I think by the time the World Cup is done here, I'll probably be ready for everyone to leave. But right now, I can't get enough.
Well, Jones and Keefe are pointing out the second wave of Scottish fans are now arriving. It's Scotland 2.0 that's coming in now, getting ready for the Friday match. So is their second team as good as their first team? Like, will the next 3 days be as quality as last week?
I don't think so. I don't think they can match.
I don't think you. It was stunning. It was a shock, wasn't it? It was just like, what is happening here?
Now it's going to be like Jackass because they're going to have to. They've seen the stuff that's gone viral. They're going to have
a high
bar. Yeah, they know they have to top it now, and I don't know what they're going to do.
Right.
I really don't know what they're going to do. Because
I'm amazed at how they just assimilate and how they all know where each other's going to be. In different parts. I mean, there's no. It's a random. I mean, they're everywhere.
Like a clone
all
army.
At once.
doesn't it feel like that? They're all like sick.
Or it's like a pack of chicks going to the bathroom at the same time. Like, and you never see one Scot by themselves. No. They roll deep. Like, it's like seven or eight of them at least together in a crew. And I guess they're all assembling down the street, right at the Cisco Fenway Brewery before the game tonight. I know that's where our friend Kat's going to be. They're going to be down there with the Tartan Army, and so I think they're taking over Fenway once more.
Oh, and you got some cheerleader headway, or we're working on that.
So we've been working on that, and I guess that before, I don't want to jinx it, but it sounds like yes, they're going to try to follow up on that viral video.
Very good,
and let it happen for them, which you know, hey, good on the Patriots. Well, I mean, they probably understand that video got 10 million views, so they're like, you know, we want to be part of it as well.
Yep.
It's good business for everybody. All right, what happened there, Stiz? I think some sports happened, didn't it?
What just happened?
Sports happened.
Oh, yes, it did. And Sports Happen is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. And yes, hopefully someone will indeed bring the Scots back to Fenway when it was a fun place to be. Let's listen.
Two on, two out. The Red Sox again down to their last strike, trailing 6-1. Pitch is swung on and missed. He struck him out. The Red Sox lose the opener to the Blue Jays 6-1. Totally not razor sharp. The Blue Jays capitalize at Fenway Park, and the Red Sox have dropped two in a row.
Oh, sad Will Fleming is back. Oh, Will. Well, after a much-needed feel-good weekend at Fenway Park, where the boys won a series and back-to-back games at home for the first time since April, the Sox once again looked like the lifeless, punchless team that they've been for the majority of the season as they do what they do best, embarrass themselves at Fenway. 6-1 the final score against the Jays. And the biggest kick in the crotch is that they had 8 hits and 6 walks. Yep. Six walks, a Red Sox rarity. I think that might be walks-wise more than they've had in the past like 3 weeks.
They had a span of 23 innings with only one walk.
That's insane. Absolutely insane. And yet I've said this 1,000 times this season, and you've heard me say this over and over, there's nothing this team likes to do more than strand men on base. Yep. And they did it a whopping 13 times last night. Mm-hmm. And as Will was, you know, sadly saying while he was crying in his scorecard there, Peyton Tolley was good, but not great. 5 innings, 3 runs. His ERA has risen from 2.28 to 2.93 over his last 2 starts. But
still stellar. Still giving up 4 home runs. 2 of them were last night.
Yep.
Well, there you go. You're right. To your point with runners on base, Dylan Cease in his 5 innings, the bases were dirtied up every inning he pitched, and yet they still couldn't get a run in.
No clutch. They got no clutch in. Very sleepy. Although in classic Sox fashion, it was 4-1, and I couldn't turn it off because here we go in the 8th.
Yeah.
Get a home run, and you get Mickey Gasper coming up, pinch hit opportunity against Varland, 2 on, tying run to the plate. 4 pitches. They're done. 4 pitches.
Yep.
And inning ends. Just a total.
Can't capture momentum. No. They can't. It just slips right through their fingers. They can't capture any real momentum all season long.
Well, Jaren Duran may have upped his trade value, though, with another home run.
There we go.
Night, which is nice.
There we go.
So they got that going for him. Here is Chad Tracy with a postmortem afterwards.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we took 4 or 5 walks, obviously drove the pitch count up, and gave ourselves chances. I think we had a runner in scoring position or multiple in each of the first all 5 of the innings he pitched. You know, we're one big hit away. Some of those were one out, so one or two hits away from taking a lead or a multiple run lead there, and we just couldn't break through. But we had him on the brink and had our chances there to get the knocks, and we just couldn't get him.
Oh, man, it's just got to suck to be Chad Tracy. I mean, it's like every game you're sitting there.
Not only does the on-field product sucks for him, but then he has to explain Roman Anthony and Crochet before every game.
Brutal.
What's the latest on Roman and Crochet? And he has nothing to say because what's he going to say?
It's nothing he can't say. He's in a tough, tough spot. I feel for him. I mean, do you guys think, how do you think he's doing at his job.
Mentally?
Chad Tracy?
Just grade his impact on his team. What would you guys give him a grade of?
So let's just start with the fact that he doesn't have a lot to work with players-wise, right? We understand that.
Yep.
Now I'll give you one positive. The one positive is what I've been saying is that we're not hearing a lot of chaos from the clubhouse. We're not hearing a lot of backstabbing, a lot of people running their mouth. There was the IKF moment a while back. That was interesting, but it wasn't anything too egregious. So if what he's doing is keeping them together and not bitching and spilling out bad details to the press, he's doing a pretty good job with that. All that being said, the product stinks, and he's not doing anything to help it.
Right, right. Like, so I give him an average. You know, I think he's kind of just keeping them right where they were. I don't think he's added anything, and I don't think he's detracted from anything. I think he's just kind of neutral.
Unlike when the Patriots had the disastrous offensive coordinator situation multiple years in a row, and that was such a big story, right? Like Patricia coaching where he shouldn't. This year is going to be defined by the offense being one of the worst we've ever seen, mm-hmm. and a total missed opportunity. And I don't think Chad Tracy, there's nothing he can do to fix that, right? Like, he's tried Gasper, he's tried Sogard, he's tried some contact guys, but they just don't have the tools. They don't have the people. This offense is historically inept. It's just awful. Awful, awful.
I think the word of the offseason is going to be alignment. They need to get all on the same page, where there's the front office with the manager, with the analyst, with the driveline guys, just get on the same page.
Well, that's what they tried to do when they fired Cora, right? To get on the same page, because certainly Cora was resistant to some of the driveline people. So didn't they try that? Like, how do they go about doing that better in the offseason?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever their new alignment is, it's not working, right? So it's just they got to do a full purge and kind of look at it top to bottom. How do we? Not a uniform way of batting like they've been doing. It's like you teach everybody the same way. You gotta stop being lazy in how you coach and get into each guy what their strengths are and develop their hitting, as opposed to a one size fits all. But that to me is what's got to be primary concern in the offseason.
Can I tell you there was something from that Sean McAdam yesterday that didn't sit easy with me? And it wasn't until after the show that I really thought about what Sean McAdam said, and I didn't like it. And it's not...
He had a couple big words. Was that it? I had to look up.
and it's not Sean, because I think Sean is a very good reporter, and I like Sean a lot.
I had no idea what inscrutable meant, so I looked that up.
but there was an article that he wrote about how John Henry's around the team a lot now, and he's not really speaking on the record, and he's just kind of just making his presence known. And I asked Sean about that. I'm like, okay, so he's around the team. You know, what does that mean? He goes, yeah, I mean, he's talking to us reporters off the record, and he just, I think, is just wanting people to know his presence is there. And I'm like, if John Henry's talking to reporters off the record, he obviously wants you to report something. Off the record, if you're bitching to a reporter or you're telling a reporter something, that's so you can interject in your writing somehow later on some sort of feeling, some sort of quote that isn't exactly him saying it, but you want that message out there. And to that I say, John Henry, just talk to the effing media on the record. Yep. If you're talking to the media, talk to the media. You obviously want what you're saying to be reported. And I gotta be honest, I thought about it, and I'm just like, Sean, at some point, can you just say, I can't have you talk to me unless it's on the record.
Some people refuse to do that.
Yeah, because that's what I would do. I would say, you keep coming to me, talking to me, and saying off the record. At some point, man, no, I'm not going to do your bidding if you're just going to sit here. And I know that's it's good for me to say when it's not my job to try to get the favor and get an inside thing. But at some point, I think you can politely say, hey, man, if you're going to talk to the media, I got to write some of this down.
The only thing is, can you do it in a way where he makes a statement as opposed to it has to answer questions? I don't think John wants to be asked questions because he doesn't know what questions they're going to ask, and he hasn't thought it through. If he has exactly what he wants to say in his head, and he can just go make a statement, but those things, people, he gets asked questions, and that's where he gets a little frazzled.
But
right?
Did that hit you guys wrong, too? Like, I thought about that a little bit. I'm just like, okay, so John Henry obviously wants the reporters to report something that he's saying. This whole off the record thing, he wants it to seep out, but he doesn't want you to say that it's from him. Effing say it. You're the owner of this team.
You're not wrong, and you're not wrong to say it on this forum, because this is what we're here for and what fans want to voice their frustration. But he's, to Rob's point, Bradford, he's a 76-year-old billionaire who doesn't give an F. He does not care. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't have to in his mind, and he won't.
But also, as a reporter, I do believe that there should be a point, if he continues to do that, where you're like, John, I'm sorry, man. At some point, I got to get you on the record. I'm not going to seep out your message. I'm not going to seep out your message unless you just let me say that it's you that said it. Because then I'm being used as a tool.
It'd carry more weight than I really don't think, if, you know, to Sean's point where he thinks that maybe he's doing it just so it carries favors with the fans. The fans don't care that John Henry's around the team more. All of a sudden, you know what? Let's not be so hard on John Henry because he's around the team more.
Right,
I don't think that resonates. I don't think the fans care. So I if that's what John thinks is going to happen, is he going to gain favor? I've not felt that
well,
from the fans.
Well, thank you for letting me get that off my chest. For some reason, after the show was done, I thought about that. I was like, that didn't sit well with me. I wish I would have followed up on that.
Yeah.
It's one of those I wish I could go back in time and go, well, tell me what happens when he tells you something off the record. Does it seep into your writing? Like, you know, like
I would hope so. You know?
Well, you would think so, but
and maybe it does. Maybe some of the stuff that we read is, you know, indirectly from John Henry, frustration with Roman or something like that.
I guess, but just put it on the record, man. People want to hear it on the record. They want to know you care, John Henry. They want to know you care.
The best way to show they care is spend more money. That's what I think.
Sure. Fix this stupid mess. All right, 617-779-7937. I mean, every single day there is more people who seem to know what they're like, what's going on with Jaylen Brown and with Giannis. But when it comes from someone like Paul Pierce or someone like Doc Rivers, who used to be Giannis's coach and obviously knows the Celtics, it's got a little more weight. We will get to those quotes in 2 minutes. We're not going anywhere. We'll be right back. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson right now at Fenway Park. Beautiful day, a little cooler than it has been, which I like, because it got gross for a while.
New grass on the field, Rich. Optimism is high. 90 plus games left. Let's go.
What do you mean? They put new grass in the
field? That's the song from Fogerty.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just gets me going.
Playball! By the way, that's the worst song to start the game. They still do the playball. We're going to have some fun. It's like there's this huge intro, and you're like, all right, Red Sox baseball. And it's like the lamest. Like,
that is true.
It sounds like the guy singing, it's whispering in his parents' basement. Playball.
But it's after the kids say playball, so you can't do anything like, you can't do, you know, Megadeth or something like that.
Sure. Sure you can. Hangar 18, you know? Why not? Throw that out there. All right. Well, this has been an interesting couple of weeks since the Celtics ended up getting bounced from the playoffs in really one of the more embarrassing ways. And since then, there's been a whole lot of talk as to whether or not the Celtics need to upgrade. We've, of course, heard Brad Stevens talk about how they wanted someone big under the rim. And, of course, the whole Giannis stuff has taken over. And Bill Simmons, a couple of days ago, said, I thought the Celtics were out. It's on. Kevin O'Connor said the same thing. You've even got, like, Mark Stein, who, you know, all of these insiders, people who have a pretty decent connection, putting their names on the line saying, the Celtics are in. Like, they are making an offer. Matter of fact, Bill Simmons said they made an offer. An offer has been out there. And you really don't know, like, what's being offered. There was who was the reporter who said that the Celtics had tried to make an offer? Oh, it was Gary Washburn. They had made an offer, and there was speculation as to whether or not they're trying to make it happen without giving up either of the Jays.
That got you all hot and bothered. That's your favorite.
Because
you want it all. You want to keep everybody.
I'm going to do a pants off, dance off if they pull that off.
Five max contracts. Let's
go. Don't you think that that's probably what Brad is aiming for?
No question.
Yeah.
At least that's where you start. Yeah, if you're him,
definitely.
Right?
Yeah. You definitely start there. I could see him kind of not budging on that, but that's definitely where you start.
Yeah. And as I said, you know, the one person in this whole equation that I do have faith in is Brad Stevens. I think that Brad Stevens got a good enough track record where we can look at what he's done and go, all right, I think that if you're going to hand this task over on doing something dramatic to make this team formidable next year, then Brad's the guy. All right. But you got to figure out from people who kind of know the pieces what they think, whether this would work, whether Giannis here would work, whether Giannis would work better in Miami, whether Giannis would choose Miami. And let's play, should we go Doc Rivers first?
I would start Pierce.
Okay.
I just think this has weight, even for me, who I'm a huge Giannis, trade for Giannis guy. When you hear Paul Pierce speak, mm-hmm. You're like, okay, let's hold up here.
All right, let's see what he has to say.
Let's talk to the Boston guy, man.
I'm not in on this.
Nah.
I mean, you are number two years in a row with what you have. Mm-hmm. You keep Jaylen, you keep Jason, and you build on that. Like, don't take that for granted. That's a winning combination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't care what people say. It's a winning conversation. Now, I mean, like, whoever the core pieces are after that, think about the teams that are that's been to multiple finals. Like, they core stay together. You just shift and figure out the other pieces to make the team better.
So that's what they've been doing for the 9 years these two have been together, though, is this what he just said.
And it worked once.
And it worked once.
And it got close a couple times.
Yeah.
So
did. But you could argue got close, but you blew it. Like, you blew. Like, right now, they're the favorites in the East.
Mm-hmm.
That says it all. You have a roster that should be better than it is performing. For the last 2 years, you had this. And particularly 2 years ago when you lost to the Knicks, that was really embarrassing because you still had the core of the championship team from the year before. So I get what Pierce is saying. Like, you have on pay, but if that's the case, you got to make a coaching change, or you got to do something else than just run this same team back, don't you?
True. That's true. I mean, when you have two of the, you know, this probably the best duo in the NBA. I would probably think that people would think that this is probably the best duo. And to only have one, and if for a while, I think it's been considered the best duo, and to only have one championship is, frankly, I think just an underachievement. I really do. To me, there's something that is just missing with these two that a shakeup to me feels it. The time is right now.
Like, yeah.
All this, and we've been talking about splitting the Jays for a long time, but I've never felt it more than I've felt this year. And I think part of it is because JB looks at himself so differently after what he did this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think the two are going to have the same partnership that they had before because of that.
Don't they need an adult in the room to have them just get over their pettiness?
You know what's like, sad is we've been saying that about them forever.
And when did they win? Al Horford was there.
You had pros.
And Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday.
You had two guys that came in there and seemed to keep the house clean. And when
but you also lost with those guys here. You know,
but you eventually won. I mean, but
that, you got closer than you.
But I mean, you lost. They were here when you lost to the Knicks, right? That this is the same team. What happened that year? Why weren't they telling them to stop shooting so many threes in games one and two when you blew double-digit home leads? You
know? Sure, but I mean, they have none of that now. They don't have. And if you're worried about the bickering, you know, with Jaylen Brown and whether or not he feels that, you know, Jason Tatum stepping on his toes and that he's the star with the whole "this is my favorite season." If you're worried about that, wouldn't like an adult in the room, somebody who's respected, who is respected by both of those guys, to just go, "guys, put that behind you."
You want Draymond? You're back to Draymond Green. We talked about it. I know what you're thinking.
I do not actually want Draymond. I wish there was another Draymond that wasn't Draymond. That guy drives me crazy. He really does. I don't know if I could ever get behind that dude.
Marcus Smart, bring your guy back. Did you kick some bees nests yesterday by saying Marcus Smart was more loved than Jaylen Brown? That got a lot of reaction.
Oh.
A lot of people come to your defense on that.
Dude, I think it's true, though. I think it's absolutely true.
And by the way,
I think people would react the same way they did with JB, like they did Marcus Smart. People, my son's friends were crying.
Yeah.
I just don't think JB, I don't think he has the same, resonates the same way that Marcus Smart.
And by the way, I also clarified with that I think that people's impression of Jaylen Brown has been blurred, like how good of a basketball player is by some of the things he's been saying. And we need to remember, this dude's effing great at his job. He's an unbelievable player. And I do believe unfairly because of his own fault, because of the things he says and statements like "this was my favorite season," that people just tend to concentrate on that and not the fact that this dude's effing great at basketball.
But back to the original point of needing an adult in the room, how old are these guys? They're almost 30. If this duo needs an adult in the room to win, then it's time to break it up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just, come on, we're past that.
Maybe, but I do want to hear from Doc Rivers, because Doc Rivers played with Giannis, and we say what you will about Doc Rivers. I mean, you obviously...
And you have.
Yeah, and I have said what I will about. Doc Rivers is a person I love. Doc Rivers is a coach. A little suspect. But he did talk about Giannis and whether he thinks that he would be a good fit here, and we'll get to that right after this. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson. By the way, did you hear that there might be an entire album worth of unreleased Audioslave music that gets released?
Oh, really?
I guess Chris Cornell had recorded a bunch of it, and he died right before it was able to go out. Or he recorded it, and then the band had broken up, but now they're thinking about releasing it. Soundgarden's doing the same thing as well. I guess with both bands, had so much leftover material that they never got to, and both bands are discussing potentially releasing it. So
cool.
That could be interesting. Greatest voice in rock?
I know you have said
Eddie Vedder.
Eddie Vedder's very good. Chris Cornell is perfect.
I would have Steve Perry one.
Oh, Steve Perry's a great
Steve Perry.
One.
And that, Chris Cornell's, he's in my top three for sure.
Yeah. I would put Maynard from Tool, actually.
Oh, Maynard from Tool?
Yep.
Voice?
Oh, my God. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he's a top fiver at least. But those are good picks. So Steve Perry is...
Freddie Mercury, I think, has to be in my top three. So
Steve Perry's... Freddie Mercury's a good singer, but for some reason, I just don't like his voice as much. Like, Steve Perry's just got a perfect... Like, nobody sounds like him. Nobody's even tried to sound like him.
Except the Filipino guy who's replacing him on this last tour. He sounds pretty good. He's pretty close.
I guess technically, you're right. There are people who tried to sound like him and got good gigs from it, too, as a matter of fact.
Bon Scott Four.
Bon Scott.
Great voice.
I mean, a very distinct and distinct. Funny voice. Oh, my balls are always bouncing as they dunk me to and fro. Like, some of his songs are just so ridiculous. Yeah, I do love Bon Scott, though.
He just took himself not seriously at all, and you can tell.
He did. All right,
come on, you guys. You guys are forgetting Freddie Mercury.
We just said Freddie.
Oh, wow. Jackson, okay. Come on. Sorry, I was trying to fix the phones. I was not there for a second.
That's all right. We get it, Jackson. All right, let's get to this Doc Rivers audio, because Doc Rivers, as you know, was unceremoniously let go from being the head coach of your Milwaukee Bucks, where Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, played and didn't play a lot while he was there. And there were rumors that came out. Which player was it? I keep forgetting his name. Who played?
Miles Turner.
Miles Turner. Miles Turner came out and did a podcast and was talking about how their time under Doc Rivers was somewhat loose and the fact that Doc Rivers didn't punish anybody. Matter of fact, he kind of let them run things. And whenever there was an out-of-town game where they all had to be on a plane at a certain time, there was, just show up when you want to. And Giannis...
That's a money grab for Doc. Come on.
Doesn't it seem like that?
Oh, of course. Of course, that's all it was.
Yep. And it was like, you know what, guys? I'm not going to make any enemies. You don't tattle on me. I won't tattle on you.
That's what it was. Guaranteed.
And you know what? The record in Milwaukee kind of was proof of that. They were a team that underachieved year after year. It didn't seem like there was any kind of chemistry. It seemed like you heard, like, in the locker room, there was a little bit of strife. And then Giannis, unfortunately, got the brunt of a lot of the blame as far as the culture was concerned, because he, according to Miles Turner, was the last guy in the plane. But Doc Rivers does know Giannis, does know what he's been going through, and knows the Celtics. So I take some stock into what he's saying here when he's talking to Bill Simmons. And here's Doc Rivers on this whole potential Giannis to the Celtics trade.
Miami's the one I can't figure out, unless they have other moves coming that I don't know. Cause it's like, all right, it's him and Bam, but you just traded everybody else. Where are you going?
And you would have traded your closer. Cause Tyler Hero's a closer.
Right.
You know, say what you want about him, but he's a straight
so
up.
So why
closer.
Would I want to go laterally? Yeah. I would just rather stay in Milwaukee
my
at
guess
that point.
Is, that's where he's trusting their front office that they have the ability to add more pieces. You know, those are the talks we're after, not in, you know,
after the last two rounds of basketball we watched, like you need like 7-8 dudes.
You need a lot of guys.
It can't just be you and Bam Adebayo, and it can't be you and Jason Tatum.
Yeah. Well, the Celtics still have a lot of players.
No, I know. You know? But
so
I'm just...
there's a much safer thing for him. The only thing from the Celtics' point of view is you are shortening your window, you know, because Giannis is older and Brown is younger.
Giannis is older with more miles on him, too.
But you also maybe, after that window, giving yourself a chance to have another window with Jason Tatum.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it depends on how the front offices look at it.
What would you do if you were Boston?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
That's called a cliffhanger, Doc.
You're out of the game. That's like a Tom Brady answer. What the hell?
Dude, you know what I found interesting about that piece is when he says, you know, if you trade away Tyler Hero to the Bucks, then there's your closer. So he essentially is saying that Giannis isn't a closer. Like, if you're trading away your closer.
Decent point. Yeah.
And I just, do we think Jason Tatum is a closer?
I've seen him close before. Yeah, I have. And you know what? I will give him like leaning way more towards closer than not closer. But he's not a Jalen Brunson. I see what you're saying. There's different levels of closer. He's not a guy he's not like LeBron back in the day. He's definitely not someone like that. But I've seen him close enough that I'm leaning way more towards closer than not closer.
Okay. I just thought that was interesting that he's basically saying that Giannis isn't a closer. And I'm not so sure Jason Tatum is. And so if you got two guys that aren't closers, Have you gotten much better? We need a closer on this team.
You know, by the way, quick aside from Doc, I had never heard. I just was Googling him, and this article came up. You know how he's blown 3-1 series leads?
Yeah, Doc,
which is historic. He said once on the record, "I don't get enough credit for winning the three wins in those series.
Oh,
I get credit for losing. I always say, what if we had lost in six? No one cares."
Brutal.
I hope he's I hope he's like busting balls there. And
he's serious. And he goes on to like in a deep dive of why you should give him credit for winning the three.
We get mad at the players for talking about process and this is the most exciting season ever when you get bounced. Dude, the coaches are just as bad. The Cleveland coach.
Yeah.
You know, we won. No, you know, horrible. We won. Analytically, we won this series. Like, get out of here with that.
Eddie Atkinson.
The coaches are almost just as bad as the players.
There was one thing, though, in that clip that I hadn't thought of, and it's a decent point by Doc Rivers. And actually, he may not have even expanded on it, but it made me think of this. So if you do end up getting – if Giannis does go to Miami, and it's him and Bam Adebayo, sure, right now it seems like they ain't got much around them. Like, I don't know how much of a team you can have when you're just those two guys. But Miami's a place where people will take less money to play, especially some older veterans, in order to chase a ring. And if they're looking at those two pieces, you might be able to get a couple of quality enough guys
Jalen Brunson plan?
Yeah, to take a little bit of a discount to go play down in Miami, where you get more money because of the state taxes, and with two guys that are definitely pretty good building blocks towards winning a championship. Together, they can't do it alone. But that is one of the few places. That place, L.A. and New York, might be some of the only places I can think of where I could see players going, you know what? Mm-hmm. It's because it's here, and it's because it's for that coach, and with those two pieces, I'll take a little bit less to go win something.
That's a good point. However, I think the bigger issue for this trade is the Bucks want something better than what Miami's offering them. Yeah. Forget about Giannis and the fit with Bam. You're giving me what? I'm going to rebuild with Tyler Hero?
It doesn't make sense.
It's not good enough.
I mean, Milwaukee thinks that this trade trade Giannis, that whatever they get back in return is going to set them up for the next 10 years.
Right. Yeah.
That's good.
That's how they think.
Well, there's Chris Haynes, by the way. Did you see his report?
No.
He is saying this could drag out further than the draft.
Oh, God,
which
please
is
no.
Shocking because I think Milwaukee wants some picks in this draft. That's part of the rebuild.
Right.
However, this could go to free agency, he says, especially if it's dealing with Boston. So we could be in for another month of this.
And by the way, when we had the guy from Milwaukee on with us a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, man, Jaylen Brown's not going to be enough. And then we're hearing what Miami's offering. They shot themselves in the foot, or they didn't, but Giannis pretty much screwed them.
There you go.
Because everyone knows he's not going to stay. There's no way he wants to stay there. And when you do that, other teams notice. And they're like, you're getting rid of him anyway, so here's what you're going to take. As long as we're better than that other team over here, that's all that matters. But you can't sit here and try to play tough and hardball with us because you're getting rid of him no matter what.
Do we think it's more likely that the Celtics get Giannis or do we think it's more likely that it stays the way it is? Or is it more likely that the Celtics pivot and get like pieces from like, you know,
that would be
like Sengun from the Rockets or
I see that happening. I see what you said there. I think they're not going to get
Giannis.
When
you say pieces, you mean win now pieces or rebuild pieces?
Yeah, like a center. And another wing.
I don't like that at all. I think if you don't get Giannis, I'm more inclined to just run it back with one additional big man than to trade Jalen for like three bit parts that are not as good as him.
I thought that's what you were saying, Ted. Was that you could see them running it back, but just getting like, let's find this big man that's not really horribly expensive, but maybe can turn into something if he's here. I think that that's most likely what's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be any major change. If they did, holy crap. And as I said, if they can do it and keep the Jays together, my God, you know, executive of the year.
Now, it is supposed to be a good draft. I mean, it is sort of tempting to say, what if the Clippers would give us the fifth pick? Is there one of these point guards that we think is going to be a star and quickly?
Man.
That would extend the Tatum, you know.
I read somewhere where it's like the first four are shoe-ins, and you get to the fifth, it gets a little murky.
Drops.
So it's almost they're at that line where you go, I don't know if it's the fifth is as valuable as
that's it. That's true, but we've heard that before, and that's why Danny Ainge pulled off a coup by trading out of the first pick, you know, in the Tatum Brown years. So maybe they love somebody. That's sort of tempting. I could see that. But then again, it's not a win now move at all, right? You're taking a 2-year break.
You guys admit. The easiest thing for Brad is just to run it back. I mean, if you just want to just easy,
but easy,
Well, not if Brown and Tatum will get along.
Well, yeah, yeah, and that's I think a lot of us.
We're blowing that out of proportion. Maybe I think we're blowing that out of proportion.
House is for sale, Rich.
Well, yep. I mean, all I know is that, you know, when the season starts, there's a lot of time between now, him saying those comments, and when they actually have to get on the court together. And there's a lot of stuff to tweet about your neighbor's rice smelling fantastic or whatever crap he's been putting out there, which I still don't understand what that means. All right, Christian Gonzalez, did we learn something about whether or not his future looks bright here, filled with cash, or whether or not maybe, just maybe, he could be on the trading block? We will get to that right after this. 617-779-7937. We'll take your calls as well. It is 93.7 WEA playing some WEI playing some Viking metal in honor of Norway here in town. I believe this is Amon Amarth, where in the mosh pit they all get on the ground and go, row, row,
row.
Seen those videos of them on the escalators.
Pretty cool.
It's cool, but it's
why not some aha?
Are they Norwegian?
Yeah, I looked that up. That's the only Norwegian band that I know. Yeah.
Take me on.
There you go.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Let's do that on the next one.
Sure, why not? It is weird watching those videos, though, because like 2 weeks ago, didn't a guy die doing that?
What?
You didn't see the video of the guy? Yeah, guy died like on the escalator at one of the T stations.
Really? Here in Boston?
Oh, yeah. It like happened like 2 weeks ago. He got stuck in one of the grates and people just kept walking right. by him.
No one helped him.
Yeah, no one helped the guy, and he just, like, died. So when I see those Norwegian videos, pardon me if for a minute I'm like, ooh. You know,
it kind of makes, risky business.
Right, and they got flags on and stuff. It's like, yeah. You got to be careful out there. You got to be careful. All right, so it is Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson here on 93.7 WEEI. And this is, you know, one of the big stories that's going to be happening, one of the many. God, it seems like the Patriots have just cornered the market for big offseason stories between A.J. Brown, of course, the Diana Rossini thing, but now we got this Christian Gonzalez story where he has not been participating in camp. He's been there. But obviously the speculation is this man is holding out for a market-setting contract, not only in his position, but there was speculation that possibly as a all-around defensive player. In my opinion, I believe that's where the negotiations will start, and then we'll end up getting negotiated down to maybe him being the highest paid at his position. But this is kind of an interesting clip, isn't it, Ted?
Yeah, it's Bert Breer last night on Early Edition, we think with Tom Curran, talking about, you know, both players are represented by the same – both players, excuse me. The two top cornerbacks in this year's that are eligible for extensions this year are both Devin Witherspoon of the Seattle Seahawks and, of course, Christian Gonzalez of the Patriots. Both guys are represented by the same company, and it's basically – they're each other's waiting for the other one to sign so that they know what, you know, what, how they want to kind of go about doing their negotiating. And it's basically Bert Breer talking about Seattle from Seattle's point of view, how they're going to handle the Devin Witherspoon contract and how that will impact Gonzo.
Based on what I know about this situation, I would say right now that agency that's representing both Witherspoon and Gonzalez is thinking that they're going to get Witherspoon done first.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two reasons why. One, Seattle's been way more aggressive with signing guys, and we see what they did for Jaxon Smith-Njigba, so they've got history of it, right? The second thing is Seattle's for sale, and the Seahawks ownership is going to change here probably in the next 2 or 3 months. And so if you're the football people there, you kind of want to have that taken care of because you don't know how the rules of engagement might change with a new owner coming in. There's going to be some urgency on both sides to get something done there. And then I think, you know, after that, like if Witherspoon gets done, my guess would be that agent is then going to look at it and say, okay, here's our floor.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the minimum you're going to pay for Christian.
My guess is that, you know, Christian's side is sitting there going, please sign so we know what to work off of.
Right. He's like, he's probably grateful that one's going to get signed first because no matter what it is, you know, you're going to try to get more than the other guy did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the Patriots, are they smart? I mean, should the Patriots be more proactive so that, you know, that they don't have to go above and beyond what Devin Witherspoon's going to get? Should they be the first ones to try and get that sign? There's different schools of thought on that. But this is fascinating. I can't wait. I'm so curious to see now that the cat's out of the bag, now that we know all about the salary cap and how the Patriots have always spent money. They're going to be forced and pressured to spend money on players like they've never been before.
Yeah.
It was back in the day. They sold to all the fans that, hey, guys taking less money, it's for the good of the team, and we can't put a good team together unless they take below market value contracts, which is all bogus. times have changed, and I can't wait to see how they approach these big contracts.
Now, Curran said on that same show, Ted, you tell me if he's correct or not, that pre-Bill, they did spend top of the market with three guys once, and it was Bledsoe, McGinnis, and Ty Law. And so it's in Kraft. He's got it in him. It's just Belichick's not here anymore.
Right.
Do you believe that? And is that true?
That is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at one time,
and I was luckily I was part of that. You know, it's all gone now. But you know, they had a different way of doing business. And I forget who the old contract guy was. I forget his name. But yes, there was a time in which they used to just, hey, if this guy was considered the best, he's going to get paid the best. That all changed when Belichick got here. And I don't see them reverting back to that, but I think they have to.
Yeah.
Because the coach and the owner were so aligned. Belichick and the Kraft were so aligned in how they paid players. But part of it was because Belichick knew that whatever the players didn't get, he got more of. So it benefited Bill directly, more than people realized. And so that was the thing. Both coach and owner aligned in how they paid players. I don't think that's the same. I think Vrabel wants, his guys to get fair contracts, and he's not going to be anything like Bill in that sense. So I it's going to be fascinating to see how they approach these big contracts coming up.
All right, there was a report that was going around from multiple places, and I did a lot of clicking on who these people are reporting it, and it didn't. I got to be honest, it wasn't the most reputable sources, but for a while the other day, there were a bunch of stuff that was out there that said that Christian Gonzalez had just bought a new home in Foxborough. Didn't you guys see that?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, once again, I couldn't confirm whether or not this was like a real story or not.
Was it Jalen's house?
No. Jalen, he's still selling his house because he's gone. He's out of here. It still makes me mad, people are reporting that. But does that mean anything to you? Are you putting any kind of stock into this? Let's just play sports radio for a moment. Let's say that this story is indeed real. You would have to think that meant at least that there was some sort of wink and a nod. We're going to get this done. We just have to go through the right channels and dot all of our I's.
Elliot Wolf did say on the record to that one reporter who got him exclusively, it was like Yahoo Sports or something like that, that he's a priority. It's a priority to sign.
That means nothing.
Gonzalez and Drake.
Like,
I think it is. I don't think you would say that and then totally do a 180. And the fact that Gonzalez showed up in good faith at the minicamp makes me feel better about it.
Yeah, it does. To your question, Rich, I think the house was valued at like $2.9 million.
Yeah.
It's not like, so I
that's a game's pay if he gets the studio.
Right. I don't think it means as much as it used to. I think guys would buy houses if they thought, think about this, Bledsoe built like a 15,000 square foot house, when Pete Carroll was the coach, and it was in the middle of almost getting done. It took almost like 2 years to build this damn thing in the town of Medfield. And then Belichick comes in and trades his ass.
Grand opening, grand closing.
And he only lived in his house for literally like a year. But so if my point is, if Christian Gonzalez was building a house, that would give me more, confidence that he was going to re-sign here.
Yeah.
But I don't think, because of the price and what he's making and the fact that he's, you could flip it and sell it yourself, I wouldn't read too much into that.
Yeah, tough
point.
To sell a house that big when you build it. You know, it's like,
it was so customized to what Bledsoe wanted. And the rooms were all choppy. It was like, wasn't designed for resale.
Did you party in there once? Did you get in there? Like,
The best times. And his house, I was in a neighborhood next to him, and we had a pathway to both houses.
Oh, really?
Oh,
like a bat cave, like a secret entrance.
He had chipping green. He had pool. He had horseshoes.
He had a dartboard with Tom Brady's picture on it.
No. Big theater room. It was an
He's
awesome.
He's got it now. He sold it.
He sold it. He put it on the market for $10 million, and nobody was biting because it was, I don't know, probably the most expensive house in Medfield by $9 million. but Curt Schilling ended up buying it for about $4 million.
Oh, really?
Turned it over to the state of Rhode Island they went after his money.
So what happened after Schilling, I have no idea.
Yes, they're right. Because you ain't never going to be able to sell that. That's going to be tough.
I just had this vision of Ted in like the pink flamingo and pool thing. Like
that was me, brother.
Belly up, just sipping margaritas.
God bless. He opened his house for all his buddies, and that was what made him one of the favorites on our team.
Yeah.
He was great with that.
By the way, we have Justin Turpin. He's a top-tier Turpin. He's here in studio because He's going to break down what he thinks is going to happen with this whole Giannis, Jaylen Brown talk and what he has been hearing while shaking the tree. And we will get to that in just 2 minutes. We are not going anywhere. Back with Terp.